97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Let's just let the music play. What do you think? I love it.
All day. Scorpions. If only I knew someone that was going to Germany soon.
Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. I am indeed going to be in Frankfurt and Passau, I think it's called, by the end of the week. We're taking a little river cruise. How about that, Bo Matthews? You jealous?
I haven't been on vacation in like 17 years, and I just... You are the vacation king. I mean, you've been back. Have you been back even a full week and you're leaving again?
Two weeks. It is the year of vacations for Mark, but
this was sales fault, not his fault.
Yeah, thank you. The radio station had us promote this trip and I get to go on it. So I told them they shouldn't even charge me for vacation days for that, right?
Well, they're not, are they?
They are.
They are.
Yes. What?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Is your wife going to get to go on this trip with you?
She is indeed. And our daughter.
Good
so it's going to be great.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, I look at you as inspiration. Heck, I'm just trying to drag my butt down to Branson for a couple of days. I want to go see the Ark Encounter still. I'm working. I got stuff to do, man.
I'm blessed. I've been to Sorrento, Italy, and the Amalfi Coast. I've been to Montana, to Glacier National Park, and now I get to go float down the river in the Danube in the heart of Europe. It's going to be great.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Blessed
well,
year,
okay,
for sure.
So I have to tell you, I did travel some this week, as a matter of fact. A buddy of mine was looking for a Kubota side-by-side and found a Primo Mint one up east of Quincy, Illinois. So Tuesday, I had the day open, and he goes, you want to run with me? I said, sure. So we stop into Pittsfield, Illinois, for lunch at the Cardinal Inn Cafe.
Ooh.
And as we were leaving, I looked down, and there's a publication called Gun News, and it's published monthly by Gun Save Life, Inc., and a lot of the information in here is about Illinois and their fight against people taking their guns away. And I just found it so interesting. I mean, there's good guy with gun stories. There's, show information. There's training information. But this one story that was titled Your Faithful EDC Blade in a gun magazine, Mark, I was actually shocked. I'll show you. It's a full-page article talking about your everyday carry when it comes to knives.
Right.
I feel so terrible for Illinois.
And there was a court decision this week saying that knives are covered, particularly I think it's called a butterfly knife, is covered under the Second Amendment, just like any other knife. Because maybe it's Hawaii or somebody who tried to ban them. And the court ruled that they're protected just because they've got a different name and operate a little differently doesn't make them any more dangerous than any other knife.
Yeah, and they are cool. I owned one for a long time, and I could never figure out how they flip it around and do it. It looks cool. Bruce Lee had them, I think, back in the day. But this article was huge, and it was a bunch of great information about tensile strength of steels and which one you should pick and different brands. And the fact that they devoted a whole article to your faithful EDC blade, I thought, wow. Soon... Illinois is going to have to do your faithful rock.
Now, you joke, but the governor over there last week announced that he's going to also crack down on advertising for guns that he doesn't like. Of course, he perceives every gun as scary. So if he doesn't like a gun, he's going to try to ban the advertising for it. The Supreme Court needs to get off its can and rule on this and set... J.B. Pritzker back on his massive haunches and teach him a lesson that you can't get away with this. We have a Second Amendment right to have an AR-15 or any kind of gun we want within reason that's nothing more than a semi-automatic sporting rifle.
Yeah. And, on this program, Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, we often talk about, training with your firearm. And this article about the knives, the EDCs, really talks about training because a knife fight is definitely close contact sport.
Yeah.
You're not a sport, but if you're trying to defend yourself, you got to know what you're doing. Otherwise you're going to cut yourself and it's all kinds of horrible. Anyway, the trip was great. It was a great day for a road trip and get away. super nice people we met up there, but we got the heck out of Illinois quick.
I don't blame you. Speaking of the Supreme Court and decisions, we are going to talk to Hans von Spakovsky a little later in the show, coming up in the next segment, in fact. And part of the thing we'll talk about with him are ghost guns. And the Supreme Court made a ruling on that this week. So you got to keep an eye on those things for sure.
Well, little by little, things are happening all over the world with the assassination that happened. What was that? That was just yesterday. This week at the time of this recording, you know, France is having their issues because they've been, you know, pretty much strapped as far as gun ownership over there. So hard to carry a gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you do when you want to train or if you want to, you know, practice or something? Can you even get a gun in these other countries? I still say America is the best country in the world.
Amen, brother. Amen. So this week was the 9-year anniversary of the Ferguson shooting and Mike Brown's death.
Yep.
Cori Bush and Tashara Jones both spent time on social media, you know, once again lying about what happened in that situation. Cori Bush basically blamed it on racism, which is the if it wouldn't have happened. Wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for racism, is what she said. And my point is a very simple one. Mike Brown would be alive today and 9 years older if he hadn't chosen to strong arm rob a convenience store.
Which there's video of that got very little airtime.
And, you know, I had a interesting conversation with somebody here at the station this week who said, you don't really believe that, do you? I'm like, I absolutely believe that. If Mike Brown had been at home playing video games or recording his music, since they like to sell the story that he was some sort of budding music star, making his own mixes, if he'd been home doing that instead of stealing a box of cigarettes or Swisher Sweets from the convenience store, he never would have encountered a police officer to begin with. And that's what led ultimately to his death. And 40 FBI agents, which are far more than are investigating Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, came in here, swept into town under the direction of Eric Holder, investigated the living hell out of this, trying to find something wrong. And in the end, they cleared the officer, Darren Wilson, of any wrongdoing. But even today, 9 years later, the lies continue that somehow Mike Brown was a victim. You know who the victim was in that case? Darren Wilson. It ruined that police officer's life. No department would hire him after that, even though he was found to have done nothing wrong.
It's very sad, the outcome and how the narrative was pumped. And that was really the beginning of Black Lives Matter and the rioting that, you know, kicked off. It's terribly sad because a young man is dead by his actions. And I think of Martin Luther King Jr.'s comment about, you know, don't judge by the color of your skin, but your content of your character. The video proved, and why it didn't get more airtime of him strong-arming the guy at the store, and then within 30 minutes he was dead in the street. There was a lot of things that went wrong that day, but Darren Wilson was, I think he was just trying to do his Amen. Job and Amen. Defending his own life first and foremost.
And, you know, you would never say the strong-armed robbery deserves the death penalty. That's not the point.
Of course not.
He didn't deserve to die for that crime. But his actions immediately after that, when he tried to steal the officer's weapon, ultimately led to his death. Nobody's to blame for that but Michael Brown. And that's the lie the left continues to tell all these years later. And then they probably still will.
Well, what's the old saying? The lie makes it around the world before the truth can get its shoes on.
Yes.
Sadly. But that's where we're at. Also, hey, you know, to switch gears here, just, you know, love thy neighbor, you know, as you, you know, continue each and every day. And I hear road rage is going up. We don't have time to talk about it right now, but road rage, I guess, is on the increase around the state. Hey, if somebody cuts you off, just let it go. Let it go, man.
Let it go. Okay. Let it go and turn your radio on.
It's been you before.
Yes, and listen to the Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Coming up, Hans von Spakovsky from Heritage will join us to talk about the Supreme Court and ghost guns.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews alongside Mark Cox. We got Carl Middleman, our executive producer, and also part of the show. Always good to have him there. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory, and they are preparing. Now, listen, don't go in there tomorrow thinking you're going to be able to, you know, get this deal. But Razorback Armory is going to have a significant sale. They've partnered up with Sig Sauer. I can tell you the date is going to be Saturday, August 26th. They are going to be doing like 100 rounds of ammo and a magazine with an in-stock Sig Sauer pistol or rifle purchase. They're going to have a rep on hand. Very cool stuff. If you've ever been to Razorback, you know it's awesome. If you've never been, maybe that's the day. August 26th, put it on your calendar, and it's going to run from 9 to 3. RazorbackArmory.com. All right, yeah. Mark.
Good stuff. Speaking of guns, and for those of you who followed us here for a while, we talk about all sorts of Second Amendment issues, including this issue of ghost guns, right? And Bo, you and I have talked about this. There's no doubt in my mind they manufactured that name to make it sound scary. Because ghosts.
Well, it is. It scares the crap out of me.
I know. I mean, if you see a ghost, you're scared, unless it's Casper the Friendly Ghost. But generally speaking, they've termed these ghost guns if they don't have like registration numbers on them. And the Supreme Court made a decision on those this past week, not a full court decision, but a decision on whether or not a ban against them should be temporarily stayed until it can be decided finally in a court. And we are lucky enough to have Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow from the Heritage Foundation, fresh off his trip to St. Louis, and we've got him on the phone this morning. Hans, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm a little tired. I caught a very early flight to get back to D.C., but I'm in my office, and we obviously had a very good time last night.
Well, good. We sure enjoyed having you here. It's the event we hosted for 97.1 out at Tapawingo. 250 people. We had a full house, and it was a great time. I don't think we talked about this situation at our event, right, but certainly on my radio show earlier this week, we did discuss it, and that's this ghost gun ruling. What's your take on this? Because I was a little surprised that John Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett sided with the liberals on it.
Well, I was too, but people need to remember that's a procedural vote, and it doesn't say anything about what the final substantive decision should be. Look, people are talking about ghost guns. Should they be regulated? Should they not? It's important for people to divide this into two questions, okay? And the reason I say that is it's not just a question of whether or not the ATF should regulate them, but the question is who should make that decision, okay? And that's what this case is really about. Look, the first major federal law on guns, as you know, was in 1938. It was the Federal Firearms Act. And it regulated everything.
Yeah.
You know, all weapons and any part or parts of weapons. Well, 30 years later, Congress had a big debate about this, and they passed the big second firearms law called the Gun Control Act of 1968, and they recognized that definition was impractical because it gave the government control over every part of a firearm, even the smallest part under any circumstance. So they pared that back. And the current definition of what the ATF, what the government can regulate, is much more limited in scope. And many of the parts that go into making a pistol, for example, are not regulated. The frame and receiver is. And the frame and receiver is what holds everything, right? All the different parts when you put it together. So what does the ATF do? They issue a regulation redefining what they can regulate, and basically going back to what the original law was, which Congress amended and changed, and basically saying they can regulate every bit, every part that goes into a weapon. Now, we can debate whether the government should regulate this or not, but the ATF got sued, and a federal district court down in Texas said, you're going far beyond the statute. You don't have the authority to put in this kind of a regulation. And so the judge issued a stay saying these regulations are not going to go into effect and you can't do this. The government appealed to the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, and then they went to the U.S. Supreme Court and said, you should lift this stay that tells us we can't do this while this case is pending in the appeals courts. And unfortunately, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court said, okay, we lift the stay. The rule can go in force while the case is pending. I think ultimately the challengers are going to win because you just can't read the current federal law in a way that gives the ATF the power to do this.
Right, right. It's like politicians trying to rule on AI, things that, you know, people don't even know about or know very little about. Hans, it's Bo, and really nice to talk to you. I've heard you for years and still never shook your hand, but someday, maybe last night was just not my night. Anyway, I wanted to point out the White House is saying swift action needs to be taken against unregistered weapons and that there were 20,000 suspected ghost guns found during criminal investigations in 21, and that's tenfold from 5 years earlier. Let's just be clear. Ghost guns, it's about a scary name. It could call them alien guns. Maybe that would be even scarier. But it's such a slight fraction of how many are out there. And most people that do it, that take the time, are gun enthusiasts and gunsmiths that want to, you know, they're, you know, it's like somebody building a kit car, something like that. So it to me, it's just like the, you know, the global warming. I just go deaf when I hear these conversations, although it's a chip in the iron or a dent in the iron that they're trying to take away and have control over us. Would you agree?
100%. Yes. And think about what you just said, what they claimed, suspected.
Yeah.
Yes.
Suspected, right? And you are absolutely right. Americans have a long and proud history of private gunsmithing. I mean, that's why during the American Revolution, we had developed the Kentucky rifle, which was far superior to the muskets used by British regulars. And there is simply no evidence yet of any kind that I've seen, valid evidence, that huge numbers of criminals are using these guns instead of just stealing weapons that they get from homes and other places that they burglarize. So,
exactly.
But look, the vast majority of these guns are bought, of guns in this country are bought through licensed firearms dealers. People have to go through background checks for that. Yeah, private sales aren't regulated, but then why should they be? If I decide, Bo, that if you decide you want to sell a pistol because you found something better, yeah, if you go to a firearms dealership, you're going to have to get a background check. But if you then sell that to me, someone you know, should you have to go through the expense of doing a firearms check? No, I don't think so.
No. So clearly, Hans von Spakovsky, our guest here from the Heritage Foundation, you look at this case, you had Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas, who voted, I'm assuming, in Kavanaugh, right? Who voted in favor of this.
Right.
They must have agreed that some harm was being done. Like, I remember the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court declined a stay on the AR-15 ban over in the state of Illinois until it can work its way through the courts. And my question about that always is, I thought the purpose of a stay was to prevent any potential damage to somebody's rights until it can ultimately be decided in a court of law. There's clearly damage here, just like there is in the AR-15 case.
Yeah, there is, and that's why, like I said, I agree with you. It's a bit disappointing that those two justices went with the liberals to do this. But people, like I said, people should not give up hope. Okay.
Yeah.
This case has still got a lot of steps in front of it. The Fifth Circuit, remember, the district court was in Texas. They've appealed to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit these days is a good court of appeals. It has some terrific people on it, good conservatives who believe in the Constitution and who actually believe that there is an amendment between the First and Third Amendments of the Constitution. Unlike some of the Obama and Biden judges who unfortunately have gotten confirmed in the past few years. So I'm actually optimistic we're going to get a good decision, because, like I said, I think once this gets to the Supreme Court, when they look at the actual language of the federal law, which is really the Gun Control Act of 68 that ATF is using, they're going to say, well, if Congress wants to do this, they can, but this particular statute just doesn't give the ATF the power to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And whenever you read an article or hear about this information, they always quote, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 48,800 Americans died from gun injuries in 2021. This is in the ghost gun stories, but it doesn't mean almost 50,000 people died from ghost gun shots. Then they don't, you know, do they count? Do they count suicides? Do they count, you know, homicides? Do they count accidental shootings? It's just mush, you know? It's mush.
Yeah, it is. And they fail, of course, to mention the, what was the estimates are that between 1.5 and 2 million times a year, lawful U.S. citizens use guns defensively to protect themselves, their lives, and their property.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it happened just the other day. I read a story about the woman who got in a road rage incident with some guy, followed into a parking lot, got out of his car, approached her, and started pulling on her door handles, trying to jerk her out of the car, and she pulled her gun out and shot him. And the police said, you know, we don't want to encourage people to shoot other people, but in this case, she was clearly in fear for her life. And
but listen, by the way, on that topic, you know, the media, the mainstream media doesn't like reporting that.
No, they don't.
they don't. And so some time ago, the Heritage Foundation, where I work, started a defensive gun use database. And we now for a while have been cataloging every time we see a newspaper article or we get other information that a law-abiding citizen was able to successfully defend themselves or their family with a gun, we put it into our database. So if folks want to see the kind of use to which the Second Amendment is put, the way it was intended to, check out our defensive gun use database at the Heritage Foundation. The stories are amazing and involves so many different kinds of people, including often elderly people in their 70s and 80s who are able to fend off, you know, burglars and other people in their homes, which if they didn't have a gun, they wouldn't be able to do.
No.
This may be a first, Hans, to have that database that people can look at those stories, because I look at different publications. I'm on Instagram and looking for those types of good guys with guns stories, because there are a bunch out there, but you're never going to see them in the news. You're never going to see them. So it's a little mind-boggling, but thank you to the Heritage Foundation for doing that. I will definitely be clicking on that.
Yeah, heritage.org, right, Hans?
That's exactly right. Go to heritage.org and you'll easily find it.
Yeah, they've got great stuff on election integrity and the Second Amendment and the First Amendment and anything else that's important to you. They covered at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, always great having you on the radio, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Hans von Spakovsky there, one of the greatest names in the legal world. We appreciate having him on.
I've listened to you. I've listened to Annie say his name so many times, and I'm like, is the Von kind of like, when my mom would holler at me with my full name? Does Von mean damn it?
I don't know.
Oh, damn it, Matthews.
We should have asked him that.
Next time.
What does his mom call him when she's mad at him?
There you go.
Hans? Von? I don't know. The intro we used for him on my show has Jim Carafano from Heritage introducing him as the former leader of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right? which he gets a big kick out of because his father was a white Russian.
Right? Love that drink.
I love that drink. Bam, you owe me a Coke.
that's great. He gets a big kick out of that. Anyway.
What a cool guy.
Yeah, no kidding. So coming up, I know we talk a lot about guns and buying guns, and where you buy guns. Have you ever done business at a pawn shop? Have you ever had questions about that? We're going to talk to Steve Moser from Steve's Pawn coming up here in just a minute on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors with Mark Cox. I'm Bo Matthews, and we thank you for listening to this program. We hope you share it. You can find it on the Odyssey app. Share it with your friends that are like-minded or maybe not like-minded, and they need to learn a few things. That would be a good thing, too. You know, I got to thinking, Mark, I've done some business with a pawn shop down in House Springs, Missouri, and it's called Steve's Pawn Shop, and this guy does such a wonderful job. And he sells a lot of firearms, and he's when I leave the door, I was like, thanks for arming America. And I walk out the door and I mean, he's bought a leaf pack blower, backpack leaf blower from me. You know, I go buy DVDs all the time. You think picture a pawn shop.
Yeah.
And that's what you get when you walk into Steve's Pawn. Steve Moser, welcome to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Finally, man, how are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for doing this. You know, I got to thinking about the pros and cons of buying firearms at a pawn shop, and you are kind of a gun store within a pawn shop because you do brand new guns, but you also do pre-loved guns, correct?
Absolutely.
And your scope of what you sell is from collectibles to self-protection to hunting rifles. You do a little bit of everything. What do you think's the hot item right now for you at Steve's Pawn?
Oh, the hot item is actually used guns. Everybody loves used guns. The fact that they could come in and get anywhere between 50 to 25% off a gun that they could purchase brand new, that we got a lightly used firearm that they can take home for a great price.
Yeah. All right, Mark Cox here. Steve, are those, I mean, what is the trend? Is it mostly self-protection, like something subcompact people are looking for these days?
You know what? It's all over the board. We have some beautiful collector firearms that a lot of people like to look at them. A lot of people like to shoot them. I do both. The collector firearm market's hot right now as far as old antique guns. And a lot of that you won't find in a new gun store. So we got a reputation down here that we like to purchase beautiful old history guns that we can pass on to the community.
What's the,
and the collectors out
yeah,
there.
What's the coolest one you've had in there? Or maybe it's in your collection now. I don't know.
I have a few firearms that in my collection that you probably will never see on the open market just due to the fact that they're one-off firearms. Old Henrys, old Winchesters, just things that you go that talk. I actually have an Illinois Regiment Henry that was part of the Civil War. And I got a guy standing there holding the firearm with a picture, with a little tent. It is so cool. It's
wow.
A cool. It would never be for sale. I tell everybody one of these days I'm going to have a great auction, but I'm not going to be able to attend it. So,
yeah, thank
well,
you.
Steve, on the everyday purchases of people that come in, and I've even traded up, you know, because, you know, you have a firearm you don't use much, and Steve's
absolutely
really fair on his pricing. But when you get a firearm, I mean, you don't have a gun range to test something. How do you vet when you're taking in a pre-owned firearm to resell? How do you know? Do you just know?
So we do the base scope of knowledge. I have a pretty good knowledge, and I have people here that have great knowledge of firearms. We just test the functionality, but we have these new things out there called snap caps. What the snap caps do, that tells me that everything is functional. So all it does is just give me a loud bang. There's nothing coming out the barrel. It's just an amazing thing that they have come out with for guys like us that don't shoot them, that don't get to test them. We try to clean almost every firearm, but obviously we can't just do the volume that we got it coming in. But we do test the functionality of it.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, in terms of record keeping and all that stuff, I mean, maybe that's a question people might have. I mean, you have to have an FFL to deal with these, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah. we follow every federal gun law. We follow every Missouri gun law. Anybody that purchases any firearm from us, has to do a 4473 background check on the firearm. So that's the other thing with a pawn shop. We can take firearms in. We run them to make sure they're not stolen, and then we check functionality. So the other thing behind that is we're getting guns back on the street that you're not selling to the average person on the street, and then that person sells that gun. And if that person sells that gun, and then it gets into a hands it's not supposed to be, but it will come back to you. So what that eliminates with us, you selling me a gun or buying a gun for me, you know where it come from.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's a little different than going to like a flea market and you see that guy with, you know, prices $200-$400 more because you don't have to do the paperwork with him, but you don't know what you're getting. Steve, how long have you been in the pawn shop business?
So I actually started when I was really young. I worked for a great guy over in Imperial, Missouri, Mike's Pawn. He's still in business today. Mike gave me the ideas and the actual. We love to treat people like we want to be treated. So,
yeah, buddy,
a lot of pawn shops don't do that. But everybody that walks in the door, they're family. You know, we treat them just like we want to be treated. And I got started when I was 18 years old working for a gentleman that knew just about everything that could come into a pawn shop. Mike was amazing on that, and he instilled it in me, and I passed that on here. And we've been pretty successful just because of that.
So when you're when people are shopping and they're going into a pawn shop and they see firearms, what are maybe some cons that that people could be aware of if they don't really know the pawn shop? Is there any?
So the first thing you want to do is obviously do your homework, look them up, research them. You don't want to pay 10 to 15% more than what that firearm's worth. You don't want to pay exactly what it's worth. So when you're buying a used gun, do your homework. If the gun is, just for an example, $200 new, you want to expect to pay anywhere $100 to $125 for that gun used. So, but unfortunately, that means we have to purchase them a little bit cheaper due to the fact that we have to sell them and there's taxes.
Right.
And then there's labor and 4473. So everybody has to be appeased on that. So knock on wood, we've never had to take in a gun back.
No,
so the other thing about a used firearm, the manufacturer stands behind that gun no matter who owns it.
Oh.
So say if you get a gun that's a Smith, even a Philippines guns, or any firearm, when you purchase that gun company is willing to stand behind that. So that's why I don't mind selling used guns. Now, if there wasn't something like that out there, I would have a hard time selling used guns to somebody.
Yeah. Well, I've always wanted to ask this question of somebody in your business. Did the show Pawn Stars help or hurt? I mean, do you have people coming in there and waiting for you to go get an expert to come in and consult on their item?
No, they don't. You know, we no one's an expert. As you can see, he calls people in also. You get people in the field like that. In order to have somebody do that, I would want my time paid for on that. So I don't know how it works in Las Vegas. But if somebody calls me in for my opinion on a firearm, I expect to be paid for that.
Right.
So in order for them, somebody says, are you sure? And I'd say, well, listen, I'm no one's sure about, obviously, but I can look it up online. And if I'm wrong, we'll make it right. We show people. I'll show you exactly what this thing's worth. And then I'll make it
offer. You've done that for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you don't come to a deal with me, at least you know what it's worth.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. You know, last time I was in, Steve, you weren't there, and your guy said, oh, he's out at the gun shows. I said, is he selling or buying? He goes, yep. And so what's your opinion of the gun shows? Because there's a story about the ATF's war on dealers in a publication called Gun News. You know, guy's a Baptist preacher, Little League coach, and the ATF comes in. And, you know, takes his license. He surrenders it, actually. And they take a bunch of his firearms. And they said, tell your fellow gun show people that we're coming for him. What's your opinion on those gun shows that you see, you know, signs out on the road every once in a while?
So here, if you're selling at a gun show, same as if I would sell in a store, you have to follow every guideline that the law requires. So if the law says, hey, you have to fill out a background check on this gun. Now, unfortunately, in the state of Missouri, you can do a person-to-person sell. But in my opinion, you need to ask questions. Are you a felon?
Right.
If they've got a problem with answering that, don't sell it to them, because it's going to get on the street and cause more havoc. But gun shows, in my opinion, they take firearms out of here and potentially take it to customers that wouldn't by chance have the time, because they work, to stop in.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors with Mark Cox. I'm Bo Matthews, and we thank you for listening to this program. We hope you share it. You can find it on the Odyssey app. Share it with your friends that are like-minded or maybe not like-minded, and they need to learn a few things. That would be a good thing, too. You know, I got to thinking, Mark, I've done some business with a pawn shop down in House Springs, Missouri, and it's called Steve's Pawn Shop, and this guy does such a wonderful job, and he sells a lot of firearms, and he's when I leave the door, I was like, thanks for arming America, and I walk out the door, and I mean, he's bought a leaf pack blower, backpack leaf blower from me. You know, I go buy DVDs all the time. You think, picture a pawn shop,
yeah.
And that's what you get when you walk into Steve's Pawn. Steve Moser, welcome to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Finally, man, how are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for doing this. You know, I got to thinking about the pros and cons of buying firearms at a pawn shop, and you are kind of a gun store within a pawn shop because you do brand new guns, but you also do pre-loved guns, correct?
Absolutely.
And your scope of what you sell is from collectibles to self-protection to hunting rifles. You do a little bit of everything. What do you think's the hot item right now for you at Steve's Pawn?
Oh, the hot item is actually used guns. Everybody loves used guns. The fact that they could come in and get anywhere between 50 to 25% off a gun that they could purchase brand new that we got a lightly used firearm that they can take home for a great price.
Yeah. Mark Cox here. Steve, are those, I mean, what is the trend? Is it mostly self-protection, like something subcompact people are looking for these days?
You know what? It's all over the board. We have some beautiful collector firearms that a lot of people like to look at them. A lot of people like to shoot them. I do both. The collector firearm market's hot right now as far as old antique guns. And a lot of that you won't find in a new gun store. So we got a reputation down here that we like to purchase beautiful old history guns that we can pass on to the community.
What's the,
and the collectors out
yeah,
there.
What's the coolest one you've had in there? Or maybe it's in your collection now. I don't know.
I have a few firearms that in my collection that you probably will never see on the open market just due to the fact that they're one-off firearms, old Henrys, old Winchesters, just things that you go that talk. I actually have an Illinois Regiment Henry that was part of the Civil War, and I got a guy standing there holding the firearm with a picture. It is so cool. It's
wow.
A cool.
Wow.
It would never be for sale. I tell everybody one of these days I'm going to have a great auction, but I'm not going to be able to attend it. So,
yeah, thank
well,
you.
Steve, on the everyday purchases of people that come in, and I've even traded up, you know, because, you know, you have a firearm you don't use much, and Steve's
absolutely
really fair on his pricing. But when you get a firearm, I mean, you don't have a gun range to test something. How do you vet when you're taking in a pre-owned firearm to resell? How do you know? Do you just know?
So we do the base scope of knowledge. I have a pretty good knowledge, and I have people here that have great knowledge of firearms. We just test the functionality, but we have these new things out there called snap caps. What the snap caps do, that tells me that everything is functional. So all it does is just give me a loud bang. There's nothing coming out the barrel. It's just an amazing thing that they have come out with for guys like us that don't shoot them, that don't get to test them. We try to clean almost every firearm, but obviously we can't just do the volume that we got it coming in. But we do test the functionality of it.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, in terms of record keeping and all that stuff, I mean, maybe that's a question people might have. I mean, you have to have an FFL to deal with these, right?
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
we follow every federal gun law. We follow every Missouri gun law. Anybody that purchases any firearm from us has to do a 4473 background check on the firearm. So that's the other thing with a pawn shop. We can take firearms in. We run them to make sure they're not stolen, and then we check functionality. So the other thing behind that is we're getting guns back on the street that you're not selling to the average person on the street, and then that person sells that gun, and if that person sells that gun, and then it gets into a hands it's not supposed to be, but it will come back to you. So what that eliminates with us, you selling me a gun or buying a gun for me, you know where it come from.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's a little different than going to like a flea market and you see that guy with, you know, prices $200-$400 more because you don't have to do the paperwork with him, but you don't know what you're getting. Steve, how long have you been in the pawn shop business?
So I actually started when I was really young. I worked for a great guy over in Imperial, Missouri, Mike's Pawn. He's still in business today. Mike gave me the ideas and the actual. We love to treat people like we want to be treated. So,
yeah, buddy,
a lot of pawn shops don't do that. But everybody that walks in the door, they're family. You know, we treat them just like we want to be treated. And I got started when I was 18 years old, working for a gentleman that knew just about everything that could come into a pawn shop. Mike was amazing on that, and he instilled it in me, and I passed that on here. And we've been pretty successful just because of that.
So when you're when people are shopping and they're going into a pawn shop and they see firearms, what are maybe some cons that that people could be aware of if they don't really know the pawn shop? Is there any?
So the first thing you want to do is obviously do your homework, look them up, research them. You don't want to pay 10 to 15% more than what that firearm's worth. You don't want to pay exactly what it's worth. So when you're buying a used gun, do your homework. If the gun is, just for an example, $200 new, you want to expect to pay anywhere $100 to $125 for that gun used. So, but unfortunately, that means we have to purchase them a little bit cheaper due to the fact that we have to sell them, and there's taxes, and then there's labor and 4473. So everybody has to be appeased on that. So knock on wood, we've never had to take in a gun back.
No,
so the other thing about a used firearm, the manufacturer stands behind that gun no matter who owns it.
Oh.
So say if you get a gun that's a Smith, even a Philippines guns, or any firearm, when you purchase that gun company is willing to stand behind that. So that's why I don't mind selling used guns. Now, if there wasn't something like that out there, I would have a hard time selling used guns to somebody.
Yeah. Well, I've always wanted to ask this question of somebody in your business. Did the show Pawn Stars help or hurt? I mean, do you have people coming in there and waiting for you to go get an expert to come in and consult on their item?
No, they don't. You know, we no one's an expert. As you can see, he calls people in also. You get people in the field like that. In order to have somebody do that, I would want my time paid for on that. So I don't know how it works out in Las Vegas. But if somebody calls me in for my opinion on a firearm, I expect to be paid for that.
Right.
So in order for them, somebody says, are you sure? And I'd say, well, listen, I'm no one's sure about, obviously, but I can look it up online. And if I'm wrong, we'll make it right. We show people. I'll show you exactly what this thing's worth. And then
you've done that for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you don't come to a deal with me, at least you know what it's worth.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. You know, last time I was in, Steve, you weren't there, and your guy said, oh, he's out at the gun shows. I said, is he selling or buying? He goes, yep. And so what's your opinion of the gun shows? Because there's a story about the ATF's war on dealers in a publication called Gun News. You know, guy's a Baptist preacher, Little League coach, and the ATF comes in. And, you know, takes his license. He surrenders it, actually. And they take a bunch of his firearms. And they said, tell your fellow gun show people that we're coming for him. What's your opinion on those gun shows that you see, you know, signs out on the road every once in a while?
So here, if you're selling at a gun show, same as if I would sell in a store, you have to follow every guideline that the law requires. So if the law says, hey, you have to fill out a background check on this gun. Now, unfortunately, in the state of Missouri, you can do a person-to-person sell. But in my opinion, you need to ask questions. Are you a felon?
Right.
If they've got a problem with answering that, don't sell it to them, because it's going to get on the street and cause more havoc. But gun shows, in my opinion, they take firearms out of here and potentially take it to customers that wouldn't by chance have the time, because they work, to stop in my shop. Or it's a whole... There are some people, unfortunately, that don't follow the law. But for the little bit amount of money that we make on firearms, it's not worth your freedom.
Oh, right. Right.
Wow. So true.
So, I mean, yeah. I have no problems with gun shows. You do find antique firearms there, and that's what I like. I like antique firearms.
So on that last trip, did you get a good collectible?
No, unfortunately, They do call it a gun show for a reason.
Yep, yep.
Oh.
And people are showing these beautiful guns. It's not that it's a sale. Obviously, some people are like me that I don't care what price that we put on it. It's the history behind the firearm that actually gets me excited.
Well, you know, to your point about that, it's like going to an antique mall and thinking you're going to find some great bargain, because in most cases, the people that run an antique mall know exactly what that item is worth, and they're not underpricing it for the most part. Same thing at a gun show. If they've got a solid antique weapon, they've got a pretty good idea what it's worth, right?
And not only that, where are you going to find another one?
Yeah,
it's like when you're purchasing an antique firearm, you know, there's so many factors that where it come from. Now, if it is a lot of the reputable companies, Winchester, you can actually call and get a letter and a serial number, and that will actually break down from the day it was bought to new records today. Now, there is a fee for that, obviously, but that is an invaluable tool to where I can call Winchester at the Cody, Wyoming Museum and say, hey, listen, can you run this gun for me? And they'll say, yeah, I need a serial number. And they break it down. It might have been sold at a local drugstore in 1920, and they tell you the price on it. But obviously that costs money. So
is it like 150? You know, used to be like 150 bucks, didn't it, for a letter?
It depends. So I have an account. It's $90.
All right.
If you do it over the phone, and if you actually want the letter, right now it's $145 for the average person.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
Well, Steve is also a huge collector of pool cues. I mean, it's almost like a museum. You should almost be called Steve's Museum.
I've got to come down there.
He does a great job. You know what? I'll buy you a taco if you do. Steve, you do a great job. You know what it feels like when you walk in. I see so many familiar faces and customers and your workers.
Absolutely.
And stuff and your family. You do a great job. And I'm glad we finally, after how many years of knowing you, that we finally got you on this program.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you anytime. I love to promote the pawn shop business due to the fact that back in the day they had a lot of bad names. I don't have any idea why, but when people say, oh, that's a pawn shop, well, we're a gun shop that actually help people in the community that we can actually pawn stuff for them. So it's the idea behind some people don't eat if we're not here because they can't take a gun to the bank. They can't take a firearm, you know, a chainsaw to the bank.
Right.
So the pawn business is here to actually to help the community. And and everybody thinks that, oh, well, people bring a lot of stolen stuff there. We don't. We run everything. Everything that comes in the door, you must have a Missouri driver's license, and we run every item. So it's a pretty legit business. Now, back in the day, I didn't know how they operated, but here and all the friends that I know that have local businesses, pawns, we follow the law to the T.
Yeah, you do. It's legit. Well, tell your crew we said hello, and thanks for joining us on short notice for Steve's Pawn down in House Springs, Missouri is where you're going to find him in the Price Chopper Plaza. Stop in and introduce yourself because he really and hey, you know, remember I told you, Mark, I was without internet for two weeks, 15 days. My wife and I went in there. He's got one of the biggest DVD collections in the world.
Absolutely.
That's my opinion. Yeah. But they're not alphabetized. I always give him crap about that.
Oh, man. Come on, Steve. Get on the ball.
We try, you know, we actually do genre. You know, it's not alphabetized, but
that's how you find the hidden gems, Bo.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hey, oh. Anytime.
Good stuff. Steve, thank you so much. I'll see you. Heck, I'll probably see you
guys,
this afternoon.
Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you. We'll see you later.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, that's Steve's Pawn.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, really, really good dude. And I, you know, I've gone in there, kind of like when I go to Razorback. If I'm around gun people, I'm asking questions because I don't know everything and I want to know more. And Steve's just one of those guys.
We should have asked him the question of what's the craziest thing somebody's brought in and tried to sell him. Because you know, Pawn Stars, they bring in cars, they bring in just all kinds of crazy stuff, thinking that you're going to buy it.
The rule he's told me is if you can get it through my front door, which is a single door, it's not double doors.
Yeah,
he says if you can get it through my front door, there's a chance I'm going to buy it off you.
I got it. That's great. All right.
I'll stop by and see him, and I'll find out what the craziest thing is. I don't know if we'll be able to talk about it on the radio, but he does come up with some good stuff. Yeah, I've been a pawn shop fan for a long time. Went down to Tunica one time, and boy, you go to near the casinos there.
Oh yeah,
there is a ton of them right there.
People want that cash to go gamble. You bet they are.
Exactly.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
All right, have a great rest of your weekend, everybody. See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.